Hi, I'm Abigail, and I'm addicted to money. So for the next 50 seconds, I'd like to feel dirty, inconsiderate, manipulative, and ashamed. I apparently agreed to play the game of life by the rules made by the rich in order to make them more rich. And because I feel powerless and out of control, I am asking you to listen to this ad for Anchor. If you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast. It's free. There are creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your computer or phone. Anchor will distribute your podcast wherever you can get podcasts. You can make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership. And everything you need to make a podcast is in one place. So download Anchor for free on the app or go to anchor.fm to get started. So yeah, that's all I have. Thanks for letting me share. What's up, weirdos? You're listening to the Manic Pixie Weirdo. I'm Abigail, your host. And so this is, it was supposed to be part two of our relationship with sobriety with Steven from Reddit. He's back, you guys. Super fun and exciting. But my computer crashed. So, and I lost like everything. And the only one that I was able to like find again and like, you know, had a backup of or whatever was this second part. So this is, I guess, the whole conversation that you're going to get. We referenced some stuff that we did in part one, but we'll definitely have to get Steven back on to like talk about that. Or, you know, if I can find and recover part one, I will upload that and let y'all know. But so this was supposed to be part two, but this is just our relationship with sobriety. So give it up for Steven from Reddit. I hope you guys enjoy it. I'm really sorry. I lost everything. My fault. It's okay. We'll figure it out. Good.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
Okay, no, you're fine. We can just pick up where we left off last time. But I guess, so, since it's New Year's Eve, I guess we should talk about like what your plans are, seeing it's like New Year's Eve. You know, we're recording this on New Year's Eve, so it's that's sort of, I guess, probably. Well, I know for a fact that like New Year's Eve and 4th of July are the two holidays that like hospitals have just massive, like it's almost like the gold rush.
Yeah.
To hospitals because, and I would suspect that a lot of those, like issues are centered, they're alcohol related, would assume. So yeah, go ahead. Like, what are you doing? How have you been able to, like, was it hard the first New Year's Eve or like, was it easy, like what, you know, the struggles and like what are you doing now, that kind of thing.
Yeah, sure. I mean, it's, I know this is going to be super interesting for all your listeners, but I'm doing like absolutely nothing because we have to go back to work in a few days, so I'm just kind of taking it easy. We did errands and we did woodworking projects, and I'm gonna make dinner in a little bit. I mean, you know, it's like any other day. What sucks for us on New Year's is that we have one of our dogs is like crazy, like fireworks phobic. And so he freaks out. I mean, this time of year, plus the part of town we live in, there's the New Year's holiday. And then for 7 days before and 7 days after, every day there's fireworks for some reason. It's like a 2 week long event. And the same goes for 4th of July. It's like, everybody's got to, like, I don't know, prepare by testing all their fireworks, you know? It's really strange.
I mean, I fully support, like, you being able to blow stuff up. That's probably one of my favorite things about, like, 4th of July is just it's sort of an excuse for you to blow stuff up. I do think that's a bit excessive, though.
Yeah, like, and seeing how my dog reacts to it, it kind of opened my eyes to, like, I mean, there's people who can't handle being around that kind of thing. And it's like for 4th of July in particular, like a big part of 4th of July, the history of it is honoring like the people who fought for the actual freedom of the country not for the like so-called freedom in the Middle East and that kind of thing, but like, you know, so
it doesn't matter. There's still that air of like support the troops.
So, but I guess the point is, like, you would think that the holiday that is about honoring like the most brave people in our country's history, you know, that's how it's taught, that those, the people that are still fighting in that same military, like 200 years later, now we're just like, well, you know, like, fuck them. We want to blow stuff up. I don't know. Like, don't get me wrong. I grew up in Alabama and Georgia. I love fireworks, but I realize now, like, man, this is really fucked up that on this basically military holiday, we trigger all these people.
Yeah. Well, yeah. The irony of like just blowing stuff up for, you know, for like, I totally support your like right to blow stuff up. I like doing it. It's fun. You get to see all kinds of stuff. But yeah, the irony that like you're going to blow stuff up in honor of this thing, and knowing that people like probably have a lot of PTSD and like trauma around it. It's like, that might not be the best way for us to like do that, but whatever. Yeah. That's a small fight, I guess.
It is. And I mean, I'm not trying to like be a Debbie Downer about it. I had never really thought about it until my dog started freaking out. And then when he started freaking out, I was like, huh, he's a dog who has never been in a war zone. And he reacts like this. Imagine if he had been in combat, it'd be terrible. So,
oh my gosh. Yeah.
But yeah. So my first sober New Year's, I guess, would be 2014. And I actually had a house party and had like a bunch of people in my house. I told them that it was like, you know, bring your own booze, but please take it with you. And I was dating somebody who was like a heavy drinker. And it was kind of surreal being the only sober person out of, you know, like 50 people or however many were there, because it wasn't a perspective that I had had before in years, because at parties, like, why wouldn't you drink? And just kind of seeing like the way people handle themselves or the decisions they make, it's really interesting seeing it through like I used to behave that way and now I don't. And it was like just an interesting perspective. And it kind of gives you, in social situations, in some ways you kind of have an advantage. Like if you're the only drunk person somewhere, you could say you're at a disadvantage, but you also kind of have an advantage of sort, because you're the only one who really has like the inhibitions lowered and everything. And likewise, if you're the only sober person at a social situation, you have an advantage because you're the only one thinking clearly. And so you can kind of like maybe manipulate the situation in certain ways. And so that, you know, that was kind of cool. But, you know, the bottom line is nothing horrible happened. I didn't have any like, obviously it was very tempting to drink, but I didn't have any issues with it. And actually a lot of people left stuff at my house and I didn't have any problem with like disposing of it. That was something I was really worried about, was like, if somebody leaves something behind, I'm going to drink it. And that didn't happen. So that was nice.
Oh, well, that's good. That's good. Yeah. I totally get that. It is very weird, I guess, like that first time. Well, first of all, there is sort of a stigma around being sober, especially since it is such a, like a socially acceptable thing to do, to drink. Mm-hmm. It's incredibly, I don't know, like I said, I wouldn't know how it is overseas, like in Europe or anything. I know it's a little bit more lax there. But like here in America, it's incredibly socially normalized to like just be drinking. And so there is sort of that feeling of like, you're the oddball out.
Yeah. Yeah. People want to know if you're not doing it, it's either because like you have like a religious thing, or you have a medical thing, whether it's an addiction or an illness,
or like something horrible happened. And so you're like some horrible tragic event happened. And so people are like, oh my, or like, it's almost kind of like, oh, well, like, do you have a problem? Like, are you, like, is there an issue?
Even if you tell people I'm driving, they're like, okay, well, you could have two and then you're good. You know what I mean? It's not, there's really no socially acceptable reason where you could tell someone, like, I'm not drinking for this reason.
Right.
I guess. I mean, I struggle to think of something. I went through tons of excuses because I didn't used to tell people. I would say I can't drink. And I would say it's a medical thing. Let's not get into it. And that, because, you know, there's loads of medicines you can't drink when you're taking. Right. And,
which, by the way, totally valid excuse. If you want to use that, like, you know, as an excuse, completely valid. Just use it.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. it prevents, because people are much less like questiony about medical things mm-hmm. than they are if your medical thing is alcoholism. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
And they're less questiony and less judgy about it. And honestly, like, it never gets like fun telling people about it. It does get easier, but there's people now that I know who don't know why I don't drink around them, you know? And every time I meet someone new, I tell them, like, hey, it's cool. I'm not like a crazy religious person or anything. I just don't want to drink.
Yeah. But,
so that they don't judge me for the wrong reason.
Right. Right. Well, the fact that there's even judgment at all is kind of ridiculous in my own mind, but that's neither here nor there. So, yeah, so there can be, like, so because it is so socially acceptable, it is very, like, normalized here in America for people to drink. It can be very, like, you are the oddball out, especially that first time when you're not drinking. But the other thing, too, is that, like, I know when I very first went to, like, an outing or whatever, it does open your eyes. It does. You're like, oh, and I started to realize things about myself. And I was like, oh, like, did I act like that? Like, I'm sure I did. Yeah. And it's very eye opening in the sense that, like, oh, did I act like that? Like, was I acting the fool? Also, it can be very, like, humorous. Like, I know that there is sort of that underlying of, like, it's not fun if you're the only one sober. You know, around a bunch of people who drink. Well, that's true to a certain extent, but I have had some good laughs around people. And I'm like, I'm so glad. Like, I don't, like, I feel like I'm going to make a complete fool of myself in this social situation. Cause I'm sure at one point I totally did.
Yeah.
But
yeah, it is relieving knowing that no matter what, you'll never be like the worst behaved person someplace.
Right. Definitely. Yeah, so New Year's Eve, so y'all are being boring. We're being very boring. We just cooked food. Like, I ate like 10 minutes before.
Oh yeah.
So I was slightly late. That was like, I was a little bit late because I was like, I'm gonna just like wolf this down. What do y'all eat?
Oh god. Well, so I eat a lot of meat and my girlfriend's vegetarian, and so we rarely eat the same thing. Typically we'll have like variations of the same thing, but like, so we make lots of, for example, like Korean barbecue is one of our favorite foods. And so I'll make, like a braised short rib type of thing with rice and bean sprouts and stuff. And then she'll have like tofu with all the same. And so this weekend we've been preparing food for my birthday on Saturday.
Oh, happy birthday.
Thank you. Yeah. At a certain point you stop celebrating them. So,
well, yeah.
So I'm doing barbecue, pork ribs, but for her, we're grilling like mushrooms and vegetables and stuff. And she's making some kind of vegan chicken nugget type of thing.
That sounds really good. The mushrooms and stuff. I don't know about the vegan chicken thing, but that's the mushrooms.
It's really good. She's been on this quest to like reproduce the texture and taste of meat with completely vegetable ingredients. And she's done a good job of it. I mean, not like I would ever eat it instead of the meat, but you know, she hasn't had meat in 20 years. So
congratulations to her. I don't know if I could do it. I don't know if I could do that. That's ambitious.
I think the longest I've gone is a few months at a time, but it's I always come back.
Yeah. Well, speaking of birthdays, that's another one where people, that's tough, man. Yeah. Oh, that's tough.
Yeah. I mean,
so
granted,
you have like New Year's. So you have Christmas and then you have New Year's and then you have your birthday. Yeah. I could see how, like, for me, if that was how it was structured for me, it'd just be like, I'm going to be blacked out for like a month.
It's funny because historically, I got a bunch of things from Facebook. You know, it gives you your posts from previous years. And so every New Year's and then the next few days, my birthday is the third. I had always posted like that I wasn't going to do anything for my birthday because I was still hungover from New Year's. So historically, drinking on my birthday is not really that big of a problem because New Year's makes it difficult due to the proximity, but.
Oh, that's rough.
Yeah.
I could see how I would just, for me, I know that like in my addict mindset, it would have been more like, well, now I just have an excuse to be blacked out for like a whole month, you know? Yeah. But also that's the other thing too, though. Like when you get sober, the thing that people don't understand when you get sober is that now all of a sudden you realize that you have all this time.
Yeah,
because alcohol or drugs, either one, is like a filler. Like a lot of people use it as just like a time filler, and like, you know, it's just something you do. Like you get home from work and then you drink, and then you drink until you like want to pass out and like go to sleep. But I mean, yeah, once you get sober, you really begin to, you're like, oh my God, I have so much time. Like, what do you do? But then you have to like find things to do. And I would assume that that's sort of where like your woodworking came in too.
Yeah. I mean, it's the sort of thing where like, if you don't have, I mean, okay. So say your day is split into the ideal like Henry Ford 8-hour time period. So you have your 8 hours of sleep, 8 hours of work, 8 hours of recreation. So imagine that you come home and you drink.
Oh, did he create that? I didn't realize that. Was that his idea?
I believe so. Yeah. I mean, don't hold me to it, but that was the idea behind the 8-hour workday. So,
I didn't know that. Interesting. Okay, yes. Sorry, keep going.
So imagine, I mean, you get home, you start drinking, and then you turn on either like your TV or your video games or whatever, and you just do that until bedtime. So instead of doing that, imagine you have just as long as you had at work of things that you now have to do when, like, for years, all you've done is basically just wasting time.
Yeah.
So in a lot of ways, it's nice, you know, because you get so much more done. When you're, I mean, it's obvious, you know, like you get things done when you're not doing nothing. So,
yeah, I like to think I do, except if it's like a day like today and yesterday, it's just been like cold and windy and rainy. Yeah. And those are the days where I'm like, I don't want to do anything. Like I have stuff to do, but I don't want to do anything. But yeah, no, that so. It can be kind of jarring, though, at first. I do kind of remember being like, what do I do now? Like, just asking those questions of, like, I don't even know. Like, now I have so much time, and I don't even know how to fill it. Mm-hmm. But that sort of forces you to, like, discover, you know, like, kind like new things about yourself and, like, what you like to do. Did you find, other than, like, the woodworking, did you find other things that you, like, you know, sort of had lost interest in, or like just rediscovered interest in, or?
Well, it's funny because I had been drinking pretty much since I had like come out of adolescence or even started it, I guess. So things like I had hundreds of books that I had only read when I was drunk and trying to fall asleep. And so I was like going back through books or going back through TV shows. Like there were entire episodes of like The Office that I had never seen because when it was auto playing, it would be either after I had passed out or after I was so like deep in the bag that I couldn't remember it. And so like reading books for the first time it was not the first time. It was just the first time I remembered it. It was crazy. You know, things like that. Or just stuff like, I don't know. I mean, I really do feel like you enjoy things more. Like I enjoyed, you know, like spending time with my pets and stuff like that. Just, but there's things, I guess, that I enjoyed less, you know, like being around like family and stuff, since they were big on pressuring me for drinking and stuff. And
oh, that's fun.
Yeah, but even stuff like it with work, it was like actual work. You kind of find yourself able to concentrate on it more, and you're not just quite at, to the same degree, just like ticking down the minutes till you can get home and get shit faced.
Yeah. So, like, so you, yeah, so you have all this time. So what, that's one of the things, is you have a bunch of time now that you need to fill, or that you, you know, begin to realize that you can fill. The other thing is that, like, physically your body, like, it's poison. Let's just be honest. Like, it's poison. You're slowly, like, when you decide to drink or use like drugs, you're essentially agreeing to poison yourself slowly over the course of time. But once you stop, like, there are things that happen to your body, like sleep, for example. Did you notice like a difference in your sleep schedule? Because like I noticed that, like, at first, at least for probably the first like 10 days, I was like wired. Like I couldn't, I couldn't really sleep very well. I was like, I couldn't get comfortable. I was like tossing and turning. I couldn't go to sleep. It was like all of us, I've always struggled with insomnia, but this was like, it had just been dialed to 11 and like would not go down.
Yeah, I think I had mentioned last week that it, I had read that it takes like 18 months for your sleep cycle to get back to normal. And for me, it was like, I had a big issue where in order to force myself to adapt to that sleep cycle, and knowing that, I mean, my morning time was kind of set in stone because I had to be at work. And so all you can really control is like what you do in the evening time. And in order to adapt, though, I had picked up drinking caffeine in the mornings to like get myself just like up and moving when I hadn't really been doing that. And but then the that creates a problem where you have trouble falling asleep because you're wired on caffeine. And so I was in this weird cycle for a while where I would like drink a bunch of Dr. Pepper at work and then come home and take a bunch of melatonin to help me fall asleep. And eventually I got to where it was, you know, like getting close to the 8 hours or whatever, and things started to normalize. But there's a lot of it that's out of your control, though, because your brain is essentially like snapping back to normal over time. And yeah. I don't know that there's really anything that you can do to accelerate that or anything.
Yeah, I don't know how it is for you, but like for me personally, I'm one of those people where like once I kind of know that information, so like once I'm given that information of like it's going to take 18 months for your body to like recalibrate itself. Once I'm given that information, it's like comfort for me, and I'm able to sort of like, okay, just ride it out. It's almost like I can do anything as long as I know that it's temporary. And once I know that like this will end, I just feel like I'm just like, I can just struggle through it. Like it'll be fine. I just have to get through 18 months before I like, you know, everything sort of is recalibrated. Did that help knowing, or was that more like something that you were just like, oh, 18 months?
Yeah, no, I mean, I don't know that I really viewed it that way. It was, you know, you look at it like on a day-to-day basis, you're like, man, I am fucking tired today. What can I do to get through this? And it's easy to throw yourself off, you know, you come home and like take a nap or something, and then your sleep is just screwed. So having something to do really helps, and something to, you know, motivate you and everything. But I guess, you know, it's a delicate balance. And I guess that's probably a good reason for there to be like a doctor involved in your whole going sober thing, to make sure that you're getting like your nutrition met and your supplemental needs met and everything, and so you're not just kind of like guessing your way through it like I did.
Well, yeah, that's probably good. I think that there are a lot of us, though. You seem pretty stubborn, just like I am. And like, yeah. once I decide I'm going to do something, I don't need your help. I'm going to figure it out. I don't know if that's good or bad, but that's just sort of how I am as a person. The other thing, too, is the cravings. That's something that people don't talk about a lot, is there are, at least for me, I had massive sugar cravings. I mean, it was just like my body. I was like anything and everything covered in sugar or fat, like deep fried. I mean, and of course, and I'm in the South. So like this is Texas, like we and you're in, you know, you're in the South, too. So it's like. Yeah, that's not far. Like, it's the I walk down the street and I could just get everything I needed. And
Texas is the land of the supersized Americans. So everything's bigger, right? Yeah. It's funny because I mean, I mentioned before I met people who gained a shitload of weight when they quit drinking. But for me, I mean, it was the total opposite. I kept eating the same thing. I think the only thing that I did is like it around the time of night when I was normally like the drunkest. I would have like a small bit of like chocolate or a candy bar or something, but I didn't go crazy and pig out or anything. I didn't have really a lot of issues with it personally.
Well, that's good. A lot of it is probably psychosomatic though. So, I mean, I don't know how much of it is. I'm not a doctor. I don't know.
I think it would be worse if you're trying to like, if you are quitting drinking and changing your diet and a bunch of other stuff at the same time, that would probably make it a lot harder.
I can't even imagine.
But that I wasn't having to deny myself of like pizza and stuff, you know, because it was like, all right, this is the priority. Everything else, we'll just deal with it. And I've never really been like a person who eats a lot. And so I mentioned before, my baseline weight is very low. Yeah. Because my appetite is typically pretty low. And especially if you're not drinking alcohol and you're drinking a lot of caffeine and it's like sugar-free sodas and stuff. What I found early on in my whole, when I had picked up my hot new hobby and stuff is that like a lot of days I would skip dinner and not even realize it.
Oh yeah. And
so I don't think that I was necessarily like physically super healthy, but I was a lot healthier than someone drinking 12 beers a day. So, you know, there was people that I had talked to about that where they're like, well, you know, you've kind of gone to the opposite end of the spectrum here. And I'm like, no, I don't think so. Like being a little bit malnourished isn't quite the same as dumping poison into your body and destroying your brain and maybe getting behind the wheel of a car and threatening other people's lives. You know what I mean? Like right. There's a big difference there.
Oh yeah, definitely. So did you also have, because like mood swings, another one was a big one for me, was I should preface that with, I do have depression and like massive anxiety and it's bipolar depression. So
that sucks.
But once I was like, once that crutch was gone and I like removed that crutch of like the drugs and the alcohol, I had to, like you said, you have to give your body time to recalibrate. And so, because you can't just like, I don't know if anybody else knows this, but like, you can't just like stop taking drugs and stop drinking alcohol and then be like, okay, now I can just like adjust my meds. That's not how it works. Like, you can't do that to your body. You will like mess everything up even worse than it already is.
So were you on, because I know a lot of, one of the treatments for bipolar is like a mood stabilizer drug. Mm-hmm. So you were already on that at the time or
Yeah. And the mood stabilizer in general, will mess. Like, so I just like the dosage will already mess your stuff up. Especially when like, if you like even the smallest little adjustment, it will, like the minute that it's adjusted, even like up to 10, like if you adjust it 10 milligrams, then like up or down, I mean, I could theoretically sleep for like 12 hours and then wake up and just be like, and look like a zombie because my body is having to readjust to that. But then you couple that with like drugs and alcohol too. It's a whole other, like, just you've messed. I've now just created just a whole soup of like madness.
Yeah.
And so when you do get sober, if you do have, like other mental health problems like depression or anxiety, or, you know, like me, you're bipolar, you can, like, you can't just go immediately back onto medication. And so you do have to give your body time to kind of like be, okay, we're not going to have anything. Like, I can't have anything because it's just going to, you know, we don't know what's going to happen. And those mood swings can be, I mean, just mad, just like crazy. It's just, it doesn't make any sense, like up and down and all around. Now, I don't know if you have depression or anxiety or anything like that, but did you have also like the mood swings too? Were they, so I don't know if they would have been like maybe as extreme, but.
Yeah. I mean, I was, so at the time, at the time that I quit drinking, I was on a pretty high dose of anti-anxiety medicine that was even higher than it should be because of the depressive effect that the alcohol was having. And so since I rubber banded back the other way, but. So I guess like my baseline was a lot higher, and I think the earlier on the fluctuations I would have, so like a mood swing, they were more drastic than what I would say is pretty normal now.
Right.
And so there was like, you know, very, very high highs and very low lows. And that's definitely something that's very challenging to get through when you're also trying to deny yourself of the drug you were dependent on for a very long time. But it's, I guess the thing, the shittiest thing about quitting drinking is like the rest of your life doesn't stop around it. And so everything else that's going wrong, if you're having like relationship problems or work problems or, you know, death in the family or something, like I lost a pet like fairly early on, and all that stuff happens and you have to be able to cope with it. And that's really the shittiest part of it, is that like the whole world doesn't stop so that you can get sober and then catch up. You know what I mean?
Yeah. How did you cope with it? How did you, like, how were you able to do that? Was it, I mean, obviously, you know, you were able to remain sober, which is awesome. Like, congratulations for that. But like, how did you sort of fight your way through that?
Yeah, that's a, I mean, you know, if I knew, I would write a book and sell it and everybody would
make
be great
billions of dollars.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's the sort of thing where, like, you know, you stick to your routine and you do literally everything else that you can do. But I don't know, man, I guess it helped that I had my work, my passion and everything. And it's good to have your support structure and everything. I've always been kind of a loner though. So for me, that was more just like animals.
Yeah.
And, you do what you gotta do, but it's, I guess at the end of the day, you really have to value your sobriety more than the temptation and whatever, like, temporary comfort you're going to get from capitulating to your craving. So
yeah, no, I so I don't know if this also happened for you or if you've even had this experience, but so I just sort of like lost interest. I was like, I don't want to do that, and like I just don't want to do it anymore. But I then, so like I got sober for like, I don't know, like a year or something. And then I was like, well, you know, I'll like try, like, I'll just like, I'm doing good. I'm doing okay. I can have like a drink or two, you know, whatever. And I did, and I didn't even have like that many. I had like maybe 3 or 4 drinks, in one, like one night. And the next morning I felt just like shit, just horrible. Yeah. And that right there, that alone, just that one experience of like, you know, thinking, it wasn't even thinking like, oh, I can go back to this. It was like, let's try it. Let's just like see what happens if it's different. And it was totally different. And I was like, that alone was just like, yeah, it's completely lost its appeal. Like, I have no desire to even like
that's funny,
touch alcohol. Like, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. I don't know if that makes sense.
I had the opposite experience with that because I had quit a few years before and made it for like months, no problem. And then I had decided that I was like just good to go. You know what I mean? And I could start doing it again in moderation.
Yeah.
And I obviously failed at that pretty terribly, but it's funny like that we both got to that point where we were like, all right, you know, addiction is cured, good job, yeah, everybody, let's
I'm
celebrate
healed. Yeah.
And we walked away from it with different messages, you know, where you were like, okay, I made the right decision by quitting, and I was like just completely ignorant that I had done anything wrong.
Oh, really? So you were like, oh no, this is awesome. Like, I totally miss it.
Well, I was just like, oh yeah, I'm totally in control now. You know, no big deal.
Oh yeah. Yeah. No, I, yeah.
But that was in 2012 approximately.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
yeah.
That was a couple years before that.
It was
like
a while.
Quit for good.
Yeah, but I mean, still, it is, I do think that, like, everybody sort of has that. That's not, that cannot be a uniquely us experience. Like, that can't be something that, like, we have alone have experienced. There's no way.
Yeah. So you haven't, like, backslid or anything in your time?
I mean, I hesitate to even say that, like, I'm fully sober because I will, like, occasionally have, like, an edible or, like, smoke weed or something like that. But that's more for, like, my anxiety. It helps with, like, especially if I am feeling incredibly overwhelmed because I have, like, it's crippling anxiety. It's really bad. But it's not, I mean, like, I don't know where to, like, get any or anything like that. So it's one of those things where it's, like, if it's there, like, I'll do it, but like I don't have it just like readily available.
Mm-hmm.
So I hesitate to even say that I'm like fully sober because I do that. But like as far as alcohol is concerned, no. Like I've definitely had like a couple. I had like that one experience, and I was like, yeah, no thanks. Like
yeah.
Because I just felt horrible. I was like I did not understand the meaning of being hungover until I had let my, it was like a year afterwards, like I felt like, you know, my body had completely recalibrated, and then I was like, all right, like we'll give it a shot. And I had, you know, like three or four drinks, and I was like, and I mean, like I was throwing up.
Oh, God.
the next day I was like throwing up, but it was like it was that like throwing up where you're like, there's nothing left. There's like literally nothing left in my stomach for like, it's, so it's just like dry heaving and like, you know, bile or whatever. It's like, I couldn't even keep like water down.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, no. Plus I couldn't function, and like, I couldn't. So it felt like I was just like really, really sick. But also I was just like, I can't do this. Like I am of no use to anyone
yeah.
when I'm like this. Like I can't do work. I can't, like, I just want to lay in bed and sleep. Like, this is not okay. I can't do what I need to do if I continue to do this. Like, if I continue to choose to drink, like, I can't, you know, be a functioning member of, like, the human race.
Yeah. Yeah, that is a big reason of why I stopped, is just how terrible you feel after.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, there's only so many times when you can call out of work for being quote unquote sick.
Yeah.
When you're like, what the hell am I doing? I'm using up all my like legitimate time just to like sit at home and drink myself to death.
Right.
It's funny. So I also have not had any like screw ups or anything, but what's really weird is I dream about it a lot. Like I have the dream where I'm in a situation where for whatever reason I end up drinking. And I'm always like, well, shit, here it is, you know, like 6 years or however long, and I'm ending it right now. And it's like not every night, but at least like one or two times a week.
I haven't hit that. No, that's gotta be that you can't be the only person. I haven't experienced that. I'm sure it will happen though. That's nuts. Do you wake up and like feel like, oh God, thank God, that was like a dream. Like, is there like a moment of relief when you wake up and you're just like, oh
yeah,
like, everything's cool.
It's funny also because a lot of times the next day I'm like, well, I drank, so the cat is out of the bag there, so I can just keep doing it. And I'm like, oh wait, no, that didn't actually happen. That's right. But it's funny. I mean, I have like no ability to resist in this dream world, you know? Like whereas in the real world, I have no problems resisting whatsoever. I mean, I had a roommate who would get just completely trashed and hold bottles like up to my mouth, like, here, drink this, you know, just really fucked up stuff like that. And I never once came close. But as soon as I'm in a dream world, it's like, all right, you know.
That's so interesting. I would love to know kind of like the neuropsychiatry or like psychology behind that. Like, is there, I wonder if that's like, I don't, that's so interesting.
Yeah.
That's really, especially since like, it's the total opposite of like what the reality is, where you know, like it's almost like if you had no control over anything, like in your dream, it's almost like, this is what it would be like if you had absolutely no control over anything at all, ever.
That honestly is probably not too far off, considering it seems to be a common theme, you know, in other situations I have. It sucks. I hate sleeping because I have like the same three dreams over and over again. And I'm like, man, when is this shit going to end?
Can we get some new material in here, guys? Like, what's going on?
For real. But, yeah, that if they ever make that, they have like the Harry Potter potion for the dreamless sleep. I don't care how much it costs. I will buy a lifetime supply because I'm sick of dreams forever. I've had enough.
If anybody's out there and listening and you've figured it out, like, let us know.
Yeah.
Let Steven know, because that seems ridiculous. That's so interesting. So yeah, I wonder if there is like a little bit, because I know that, like, you know, I've been in therapy for a really long time and I'm a big advocate for it, but I am very much like a control freak. And that was one of the reasons why I like used, was because it was like the one thing that I felt, because when I started using like in my adolescence, it was like, I felt like the world was like, my world was very out of control. And that was the one thing that I could control. I could control like how much, you know, of a drug I took, how much I drank, you know, any of those things. It was which is incredibly ridiculous, because when you really look at it, it's like, yeah, but I kind of wasn't either. Like, I felt like I was in control, but the truth of it is that, like, no, I was even more out of control than I was like observing my world around me to be.
Yeah, if you had had even a small amount, you wouldn't have gotten into the situation in the first place. So it's actually the total opposite of what you told yourself.
Right. But I do think that that's pretty common with, you know, addicts, alcoholics, whatever you want to call us in general, is that like we do like to have that sense of control. But it has manifested itself in other ways in my life. Like, once I stopped using, you know, and like drinking, I've realized that, like, no, I am a huge control freak. Like, I can't, it's like to the point where, like, if I see like dirty dishes in the sink, like, I can't focus on anything until like those are clean and in the dishwasher and, like, you know, and the laundry's folded and put away. Like, it does manifest that sense of control and need to like want to control things does manifest itself in like other ways. Once you like sort of remove, once you deny yourself one thing, it's like, well, we'll just channel it in a different direction.
Yeah.
does that happen to you? Have you noticed anything like the control thing, or is it something different for you? Or
I think I've definitely gotten controlling as fuck. Like I really can't help it. And it's, I don't know. It's something I have to actively, very consciously try to avoid, because otherwise I know it's just miserable for everyone around me. So I don't know why that is. I don't know if that's a coincidence or if that's something common that happens, but
I don't know, but I feel like it's a common thing, at least that sense of needing to control things is a common thing amongst addicts, because you're not the only person that I've like talked to about that. And it's but it seems to be like a steady stream of like, no, that's like, I have that too.
Interesting.
Have you had to like enlist the help of anyone to be like, hey, you're being a dick? Like, or no?
I mean, I think my girlfriend's gotten pretty good about identifying it and helping to maybe get me to ease off a little bit. But at the same time, like, I don't know, we need some sort of service where you could have, I guess, like a mediator come in and be like, all right,
Here it is. This is the million dollar idea.
Or is this person being ridiculous? Because like there are certain objective truths. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Like, I'm not talking about anything.
We need to make this happen. We need to make this happen, because if we could figure out a way to make an app for this, like, billion dollar idea. Instantly.
Like, okay, Abigail, just hypothetically off the top of my head, not coming from any real situation, no real people involved in this, is it controlling to ask your spouse to like put the little tie on the bread so the bread doesn't all go bad? Or
no.
To like put the milk back in the fridge so that there, that one's not,
no.
I don't drink milk. So that's a real hypothetical one. Is it controlling, or are you a bad person for getting mad if you come out in the morning and the milk is out from last night?
No, because the milk's probably bad.
Well, I mean, so where do you draw the line, you know? Like,
no, but I mean, well, I think that, like, to a certain degree, like, it's one of those, I mean, if you were to, like, blow up and start, like, throwing things and being like, this is fucking ridiculous, you know, just, like, completely out of left, just, like, I mean, that's, like, okay, like, maybe bring it down. But if you're just, like, dude, really? Really? I've done that a couple of times where I've come out, And I've had those where my husband will like make a snack, like a midnight snack or something, and I've been asleep, you know, and then I'll come back out and I'm like, dude, really? Really? There's glass. You broke a dish last night and you didn't clean it up, and it just, you just came back to bed. And he's like, I was like, why is there glass? There's glass. There's the broom. Sweep it. Throw it out. Like, no, it's not controlling. It's one. I think it gets to be a problem when, if you like blow up and you're just like, you know, and it's like, it gets like, that's where it could be like borderline abusive, where you're just, you start throwing stuff and screaming and like, you know, throwing a big tantrum and then like, you know, drive off, or like, you know, that's where it's like, okay, maybe like it's not that big of a deal, but also it is frustrating. It's like, well, I mean, just that. The fridge is right there. Just turn around and put it up.
I think maybe like the control thing is a spectrum, and everybody has their limit of what they can tolerate before it starts to just like become a problem for them.
Oh yeah. 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 Well, like that. So like I said about like the laundry or the dishes earlier. Yeah. Like my husband knows. My husband's very much aware. He's like, if he sees it before me, if he sees like there's a pile of laundry on the couch or something before me, like before I realize it's there or whatever, he's like, you need to just do that now. Because if we leave this house, like we're not going to like, we leave this house to like go have, you know, like a nice dinner or like even go to the grocery store, you will not focus on anything until you get this done, and you'll turn into like, you know, a crazy person. So just do it now and then we can leave.
I like how the solution to that is he has you do it.
Oh yeah. Well, no, but that's because that's on me, because if he does it, he'll do it wrong. Because there's a right way to fold laundry. There's
that's
not.
True. That's true. I mean, no, I completely agree. I, like, okay, is this really controlling if less than 50% capacity of the dishwasher is used because of the way items are put into it? Is that controlling, or is that just objectively logical? You know,
no, that's just like, I, well, first of all, I don't run the dishwasher unless it's like full, but I have a certain way that I like the dishwasher loaded. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, like the, it's like cups, plastic stuff, like all that stuff goes on the top. Big yeah. objects, bowls, glass, you know, pans, all that stuff goes on the bottom. You know, any sort of like utensils go on the side, but that thing better be packed. You better not be able to get one more thing in there before you run it. If there's like four things in the dishwasher and I see that it's been run, I'm going to be like, what is happening?
Oh, interesting. Well, I guess, I mean, okay, so say if that's all you have to wash, that's fine, I think, because then you can be cleared out and all your shit's clean. But like, mm-hmm. if there's a mountain of stuff in the sink that you're waiting on running, and then in the dishwasher, there's like three things. You know?
Yeah.
That makes a little less sense.
No, that makes, yeah, no, I'm with you on that one. But yeah, no, I mean, those are like controlling things for sure. Yeah, no, vacuuming is another thing. I'm probably like on the spectrum of like OCD or something, because yeah. I do. I mean, it's definitely not like to the point where like I have to, every time I walk into a room, I have to like flick the lights three times or anything like it's not, sure. you know, that bad. But it's just, yeah, like it. Yeah. yeah. I'm folding the laundry because you do it wrong.
Yeah.
Or like, I'm going to clean the bathroom again because he'll do it wrong. And by wrong, I mean like you use newspapers to clean windows and mirrors. Yes, I know. See, and this is where it's like, this is where that controlling part of me
Wait,
comes out.
You're supposed to use newspapers or you're not?
Yes. No, you are.
Why?
You're supposed to use because it doesn't streak the glass. You don't get streaks in the glass if you use newspaper, because there's the because the ink in the newspaper, like it prevents all those streaks.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. I didn't know.
Yeah. And so, yeah, but my husband didn't either. And so the one time he cleaned the bathroom, there were like streaks all over the mirror. And I was like, nope, your cleaning the bathroom privileges have been revoked. Like, you can't do this anymore because you just do it wrong. I also have to, like, I have to make the bed in the morning. That's one of my things, too.
Oh,
I don't know if that's, but it's just, it's, see, it comes out like that controlling part of me is like, no. Like, order. I need order. I have to make order in this like chaotic. And honestly, my life is not that chaotic. I work from home. I do a podcast. Like, it could be worse.
Definitely could be. Yes. That. But at the same time, you know, your, I guess your viewpoint, or the frame through which you view the world, it's relative, right? And
yeah.
so, what is a big deal for you is not going to be a big deal for someone who is, you know, like, living in squalor and poverty, or someone who is like a multi-billionaire, you know what I mean? Like, right. it's, I think it was Mark Zuckerberg who, talking about Facebook, was like, the squirrel in your yard has a much larger impact on you than, in terms of the news, than like the war in the Middle East or something, you know, because like, it's
not
is,
wrong.
It's there and in your face and it's not removed. So these like little problems, maybe relatively for you, because everything else is great, it becomes a bigger deal than it would otherwise.
Yeah. And let me be very clear. I am incredibly grateful and understand how very privileged and lucky I am for those to be my biggest problems.
Yeah,
like,
definitely. Oh, yeah, yeah. No question.
And I honestly, you know, if I have to pick, those are the problems that I would rather, you know, like be trying to deal with than trying to figure out something. You know, I can't even imagine what else. But I mean, so like your support system seems to be very much sort of like mine is, where it's a very tight knit like circle. Not even necessarily of people, because we have three dogs and, you know, I'm with those three dogs. Yeah, we're with, I'm with those three, because again, I work from home, so I'm with those three dogs like more than anybody else. So they're, you know, if I'm having a panic attack, then like they're there to help me. But then, you know, as far as like the human part of that, the support circle is like, you know, my husband, my therapist, you know, like a couple of friends, but it's pretty small. Is yours similarly small?
Oh, yeah.
Or...
I guess especially because the pandemic stuff have gotten a lot more kind of closed off from the social sphere. But, you know, a big part of it, honestly, was quitting drinking. You lose a lot of friends. I had mentioned that before, whether or not you don't have to lose them, but you lose that activity. And so a lot of relationships and friendships can't withstand that. And so I have different
friends. Which is weird.
Now. Yeah.
When you think about it, it's really weird because it's like, if that's the, like, we just have this thing, we like to poison ourselves together. Like, that's what we have in common.
Yeah.
That's why we're friends.
You don't poison yourself anymore, you're not my fucking friend. Yeah.
Right.
I have different friends now that, you know, I don't know if they're better friends or worse friends or like closer or not, but
again, it's all relative.
But you know, I don't really, it's been so long now that I don't really see people other than my partner as like a support system for drinking anymore.
Yeah.
Earlier on it was, because you have to surround yourself with people that want to see you succeed. But now it's kind of just like, it doesn't really play a factor for me day to day.
Oh, that's, I mean, yeah. I mean, that does. I also think that that's just part of like being an adult too, is like, as you get older, you realize that like you're the circle of people that you really truly care about and like care what they think and like all of those things get smaller. You know, I don't know if that's probably not true for everybody, but that seems to be true, at least for like me and, a lot of the people that I know. I don't know if that's something you've experienced as you've gotten older. Like,
yeah, there's that. And there's also just, you know, I think it's kind of difficult to pass a certain age to meet people as easily and find people with common interests as easily as it was when you're younger, especially if you're in school, like college or high school or something. So it's like, imagine you graduate college and you have like 100 friends. Well, 10 years down the line, which is where we're at approximately, it's not realistic to think that you're in as close of contact with all those people as you were, and they probably haven't been replenished by new people at the same rate that they would have been. So over time, you know, your circle kind of decays unless you're actively keeping it up. And to be honest, I just don't have the energy for that or the time. So I kind of just lose contact with people. I've met new people even in the last year, like you, obviously. But, you know, it's like that I don't do it at a high enough rate for all the people that I lose touch with. So,
well, I was going to say, while you were saying that, I was like, that just sounds like a lot of work and I don't want to do all that.
Yeah. Exactly.
I don't have the energy.
The best friends that I've seen, God, there's like a meme about this or something where it's like, dude, friends, like if you haven't talked to them for 10 or 15 years, you could just call them up and be like, hey, oh yeah, what's up? Exactly like you had left off. You know what I mean? And that's the kind of friends that I feel like I have, where we won't talk and they'll just be like, oh, hey, how's it going over there? Oh, yeah, yeah, it's good.
Yeah. No, it's the best. Those are the best. I call them low maintenance relationships because I need very low. I can't deal with high maintenance people. I'm high maintenance enough. I don't know if you can tell that from my, like, you know, panic attack I would have had if my husband did the laundry. But, yeah, I need low maintenance people in my life. I can't be worried that I texted you something and then it came off wrong, and now we have to have a 45-minute conversation about, you know, you didn't. I meant the text sarcastically, but you read it seriously. I can't do that. Like, no. So that's changed for you. What else has changed? What are like the three big things that you have found in your life that have gotten better and that have changed in your life since getting sober?
I mean, I guess the biggest the biggest thing is like my priorities in general, you know, like the way that I, or my goals in life, the way I want to spend time is very different, because when I was drinking, my only priority in life was to be drinking. And so I would do whatever it took to be doing that. If it meant like skipping work or canceling plans or whatever, or even making plans, if it meant that that's what I needed to do to get to that. And so now the way for me, like the ideal way that I'm spending my time is typically that I'm, I mean, obviously not drinking, but doing something that I enjoy, which a lot of that stuff, the things that I'm doing is maybe similar that I would be doing when I'm drinking, but the big difference is that I'm not doing it destructively.
Yeah.
Positive things. The, I mentioned before, like the weight loss and financial stuff, that kind of goes hand in hand. Just like, I would say general quality of life improvement. There's really not a downside to it. Honestly, if you, as long as you're not compensating with something equally unhealthy, like overeating or, some kind of destructive activity, like
even like overworking out, like, you know, it, yeah, it can manifest itself, and anything can truly be considered unhealthy. Just, you know, make sure that you're not going to the extreme with it.
Yeah. And I guess a big thing is, the big change is having to be more genuine in social situations, because you're not putting on like the drunk mask that is just like, you know, you're the party animal or whatever. When you're talking to people, you're having to communicate with them like an adult human and behave like an adult human.
Right.
So, I mean, it might not sound like a lot, but that's a big difference. And it's, I don't know if it's necessarily a positive one, but it is a big change. So,
well, I mean, it's kind of sounds like super cheesy and cliche, and I kind of even hate to say it because of those things, but unless you try it, like unless you try getting sober, and like, you're really not going to understand like what we're talking about.
Yeah.
It sounds really bad and horrible, but like, it's true. Like, unless you just try it, give it a shot, you're not going to really understand like how big of a change those things can be.
Yeah. And it's one of those things where like, even if it seems kind of shitty, you have to admit that it is a positive thing to be forced to be genuine and to have like, you know, healthy social interactions and all that. Even if it's not necessarily fun, it is good for you. So I have to admit that, at least. I think that's pretty indisputable. But, yeah, I mean, you know, overall, I'd say I'm a lot happier, a lot healthier, have more free time, more money, more, you know, better relationships in general. And I'm definitely at a better point in life than I would have been had I kept drinking. To be honest, I don't even know if I'd be alive. So that's
fair.
Yeah.
It's just, see, it just sounds all good. Like, it's just, I like you kind of list them off, yeah, like that, and I'm like, there's really not a downside.
I guess,
there?
You know, the downsides are when shit gets real and
yeah,
you get like a curveball in life or whatever, you are forced to confront it with a clear head, and that is hard.
Yeah.
And it's not impossible, because lots of people do it. Mm-hmm. But it's definitely more challenging than being able to just like drink yourself through it, mm-hmm, and
it's more genuine. Yeah. It's more genuine.
But no, I mean, that's a huge downside. And it's something something I don't really have an answer for, you know. It's just I don't know what you should expect. But
well, I think that's interesting too, because people will start to use again for different reasons. And I know that it seems to be sort of like the most common thing is that people are like, oh yeah, well, you had this like string of horrible, horrible things happen in your life, so of course you started drinking again. But it's actually really interesting because I have met several people that have said that's not when they have wanted to drink again. It's when stuff is going really well. When they're like on top of the world and they're like, oh, my life is awesome. Like, yes, like this is, you know, like this is so great. Everything seems to be going really well. That's when they're like, I can for sure have a drink. And then, and so, well, I had never really thought about it like that. I was like, because I guess I sort of always had that like stereotypical, like, well, you drink or you use drugs because like you're sad or like you want, you know, like, it,
you know,
life is really bad. I don't know. It just never occurred to me.
Yeah. For me, it was always like, if you're upset, you drink. And if you're celebrating, you drink. And if, you know, like you're bored, you drink. It's like you can make any occasion that you want to out of thin air, you know.
Yeah. So well,
I guess it follows that there's people that would, depending on the situation, they would mm-hmm. use it as a cause to.
Yeah, well, that's true. I mean, yeah, you can come up with anything, you know. I got the mail today. Let's have a drink.
Yeah.
You know. I don't know. So, okay. A couple more questions and then I'll let you get back to your New Year's Eve stuff. So where did like the guns fit into that? I know that when you were on here previously talking about guns, like you had sort of grown up with that.
Yeah.
Did that sort of get like a reinvigorated or like re-sparked in your, like once you got sober, or were you still kind of always playing with it a little bit?
Yeah.
Cause you said
I guess,
that the woodworking was pretty new.
Yeah. That was a new thing. I mean, I got more into shooting and stuff for a while, but it was pretty steady, you know, like it wasn't really a big factor. There were some times with where drinking and guns, like, I mean, drinking and guns is never a good combination, but there was times when it almost became a very bad combination, not because of me, but because of people that I was with who like get a lot more self-destructive when they drink. So there's been a number of like, there's a number of like suicide attempts that I've prevented or that have, you know, kind of occurred because of guns that like either I owned or had facilitated or whatever. So that is kind of not great. But in that case, I kind of am more prone to put the blame on the drinking and the addict than the inanimate object, because I've seen people try to commit suicide with chef knives before. And
right.
So
no, I didn't mean it like in that way. I just meant like, did that sort of interest like sort of fade out a little bit while you, did your drinking sort of like overpower that interest, or was it kind of like always just a steady stream there?
Yeah. I don't think it was really related, to be honest. I don't think it abated or anything when I quit. So.
Oh, well, that's good. So you've at least had like several things that you've been interested in just sort of throughout your life that you have been able to like carry through even without like the alcohol, which is good.
Yeah.
That's pretty awesome. So when did the, so I know that like obviously the guns and then like the woodworking. When did the soaps and like you and your girlfriend are going to have to come on here and talk about all of those things too, because I'm super excited and interested, and she's going to have to come on here and talk about her vegan or her vegetarianism, because I tried and I can't do it because I'm anemic, but.
Oh yeah. Yeah. You should definitely get her cornered and have her talk to you about it by herself, because it's way more interesting when she can't just turn to me to answer the question. But yeah, I mean, so let's see, that was 2017. So I had been sober for 3-ish years when my girlfriend and I met, and I had gotten her into the, because basically the whole thing with the shaving hobby is like people get into it because they have issues with their shaving. We're kind of like evangelicals, the people that do this shaving technique, because like if you see someone who has like razor burn or ingrown hairs or they're complaining about the cost of new razor blades and stuff, or anything like that. Or you even right. just find out that somebody uses like the expensive razor blades from the grocery store, or the shaving goo in a can. It's like an overwhelming compulsion, kind of getting back to that controlling thing where it's like, listen, there's a better way to do this. You need to quit torturing yourself with this inferior method and tools. And so I had kind of like, I had seen what she was using and I was like, ah, you could really be doing this better. And I make a lot of this stuff and I have friends that make the rest of the stuff. Just try this. And, you know, she liked it because there's very few people that try it and are like, this isn't for me. Most people that do are like, okay, yeah, this is better. It's cheaper. It's more effective. There's very few downsides. And so, well, once she'd been doing it for long enough, it was the sort of thing where she had been using the soap that I had was all made by people who were either making it like targeted for men. And so it had like what you would call traditionally masculine scents, or it was made most of the soaps on the market are made with animal products. And so she felt bad that if she wanted to get the stuff that she liked the smell of or whatever, it would have animal products in it.
Yeah.
And so the idea was it was something primarily that we could do together as a hobby, but also so that she could get the scents she wanted, because it plays a big part in the experience, whether or not people realize it. Like your entire bath time experience, the smells are a huge part of it, especially it seems like for women more so than men. And so she
would probably agree with that. Yes.
But she also wanted something that she could feel ethically positively about, like she wasn't supporting.
Oh, I totally. Yeah, I support that fully. Absolutely.
So that was where the idea to do it ourselves in a recipe that we know, like we know what's going into it. So we know that it's not, because most shaving soap or soap in general, I should say, uses tallow, which is rendered animal fat, usually beef.
Oh.
And there's other more exotic ones that are used, but the beef one is kind of I think it's the cheapest one. And so we just kind of did it for her initially to have stuff for her to use. And then I'd kind of sent some to some friends that I know through the hobby, and people really liked it. And they really thought that she had like a unique approach to scenting, which she definitely does, because there was nobody in our sphere in this community who was doing the kind of, cause she's really into like horror movies and creepy stuff and like a, you know, year round Halloween kind of person. And so there was nobody who was doing stuff like that. It was all very like more traditional, and a lot of it geared exclusively towards men, or they'd occasionally put out like a single female fragrance that's kind of like the pink AR-15 of their lineup, you know. And so
it doesn't have the same, like it's not the same. It's just I don't care. It's just not.
So, but there's really not a market for people that, like any company that has tried to just make shaving products for women in this artisan community has completely failed. There's really not enough participation for it to work. So we kind of kept it like gender neutral slash like feminine ish early on. But even the stuff that we have made, honestly, like the stuff that we have made that was like, okay, this is for women and it has a companion piece that is for men. People, like the men, loved the thing that was for women. And so it really has no meaning anymore as far as like the sense for genders. It's been completely like, I don't know.
Obliterated. Yeah, that just doesn't even matter anymore.
So, but yeah, I mean, it kept going, and she, you know, we got better and better at it, more and more popular. And then once things were doing well enough, we started getting contacted by businesses that were interested in carrying it.
Oh,
so
wow.
Now I think we have like 6 or 7 of them, businesses around the world now.
Oh my gosh. Congratulations.
Yeah. So it's been going really great. She last January, I think. So 2019, she was able to quit her job and do this full time. So.
Oh, wow. Yeah. That's so awesome. Congratulations to you both. That's so cool. Well, okay. So, yeah. So I guess that's our relationship with sobriety. I'm going to have you back on to talk about, well, probably you and her to talk about both all the shaving stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you could, I think you should definitely have her on for something by herself where she has to answer the questions.
She's going to have to talk about the vegetarian thing because like I said, I tried for like a week and I ended up being hospitalized because I was anemic and crazy. They were like, yeah, you can't do that anymore. But I probably did it wrong. So
maybe
that's neither here nor there. But she's going to have to come on and talk about her vegetarian thing, which is awesome. Maybe she can give me tips. And then you both need to come on and talk about the shaving
stuff,
all the small business stuff, because that's so cool.
Oh yeah. It's honestly, I mean, it's weird, right? I never thought at any point in my life that I would be like a well-known maker of shaving goods. And it is weird. I understand that it's weird, but like for any hobby out there, there are like hundreds of people that do this sort of thing. And a lot of them earn a living doing it. And so it's like, there's people that are like, oh, I really want to make extra money, or I want to get a side hustle or whatever. And I feel like they go about it the wrong way because like I don't know. I could go on about this forever, but people try to break into markets that they have no business being in because they don't have a passion for it. Like their passion is making money. And that really is a stupid reason to get into something like that. In my opinion, you know, like if you're passionate about making money, then like get a job
for Wall Street.
Yeah. Like don't get into like a craft, you know?
Right.
That's not really the purpose behind it. I don't know.
That's so cool. So do you think that you would have been able to find that if you had not chosen to get sober?
Oh man, it's hard to say, but I honestly don't think I would have, because like I would have no reason to, you know, I didn't.
Yeah.
I was filling that void with something else.
Yeah.
And so I was content to just keep like wasting time. So
okay, well, awesome, thank you so much, Steven. Go ahead, plug all your stuff again, and I'll
put the
same stuff in the description again, so go ahead.
So I do woodworking stuff. Obviously there's a heavy like focus on shaving, but I've been branching out more and more, so I actually have my custom end grain cutting boards that are available for sale that you can design yourself on my website, which is dogwoodhandcrafts.com. And I'm on Instagram as well, at dogwoodhandcrafts. And then my girlfriend and I sell soap, and we sell soap for shaving. But if that's not your thing, we sell bath soap that you can use for your hands, face, body, whatever. We have all of our scents are created in house and like from scratch. We don't use anything that is like, there's a lot of soaps out there, when you buy them, it's like a pre-blended fragrance that someone else came up with. We come up with all of them ourselves, and they're all themed after like spooky horror things or influenced by like Celtic pagan roots that we have. And so we sell like that. We have perfumes of those, and we have aftershaves that are great, like for men or women. It doesn't matter. If you're not using some kind of aftershave when you shave, you're really doing yourself a disservice. It is amazing for your skin. And I'm not saying you need to use ours. You need to use something, though. So that's southernwitchcrafts.com and Instagram at southernwitchcrafts.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Steven. And I will talk to you later about both of you coming back on.
Yes, definitely. I'll put you in touch, and hopefully you guys can make something magical happen.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks for having me again.
Mm-hmm. Bye.
Bye.